You won't want to buy every property that comes in, even if the price is right. There's a lot of properties that we simply do not want to buy, just because I know that they are going to be a pain in the butt to resell. Mm-hmm. You'd have to get it at such a very small price in a lot of cases in order to have enough profit to make it worth it. For us, you know, we don't buy landlocked properties. We don't buy properties that are on the side of a mountain, things like that. And even if I got a lot of those properties really cheap, it's just not worth it.
Welcome to Turning Profit, a podcast for people that love real estate. Learn the business models and skills that professional real estate investors use to make money and build wealth. Visit turningprofit.com for a wealth of investor resources. And now, here are your hosts, Pete and Heather Reese.
Welcome to the Turning Profit Podcast. Heather, it's so great to be here once again.
Yeah, this is fun.
This is fun. It's always fun on the Turning Profit Podcast. Now, today, we are going to be talking about the 9 shocking truths of land investing.
Well, these headlines are getting more shocking by the moment.
They are shocking. And there are, I guess, maybe more than 9 shocking truths, but these are ones that I feel like are things that maybe some of the experts don't talk about.
Okay, so the top unspoken shocking
truths
about land investing.
Well, yeah, these are things that kind of I didn't realize coming into the business. I didn't hear anyone ever talking about them, but they're things that are maybe inconvenient truths about the business that definitely should be discussed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, maybe another way would be like things you need to know. Important.
These are all important things, Heather.
Right.
And if you're new to the podcast, stay till the end because we also cover 4 questions that we cherry pick from our Land Conquest community, questions asked by community members, and we address them here on the podcast.
Those are actually, that's my favorite segment.
Is it?
Yeah. Okay. I don't know. I like the community aspect. And we don't, this isn't live. So that's the best way to
For us.
That's very true, because if not, it'd be very strange, right?
Right.
I don't look at any of the stuff you prepare beforehand, so okay. I guess in a sense, this is live for me.
Right.
I have no idea what we're even talking about most days, but also, if you're new to the podcast, who are you, Pete? Maybe you should
Know. Well, I guess that's a good place to start. My name is Pete Reese, been land investing since, I guess the end of 2020 is when I got into this whole business model. I've been in real estate and real estate investing for quite a bit longer than that, since the early 2000s, about... when was it? 2000 when we bought our first home. And ever since then, kind of dabbled into different parts of the real estate world. Started as a fix and flipper. We had our own company kind of buying and selling properties, fixing them up and reselling them before it was cool. I actually got my broker's license and you got your real estate agent license in 2006. Ish, something like that.
2006, yeah, somewhere around there.
Real estate market crashed, and we actually got out of investing altogether at that point. Simply focused on helping
distressed clients.
So we got into the REO world, like the bank owned property world, because mm-hmm. that was all that was selling at that time. Got connected with a bunch of investors and kind of found properties for them for a while, dabbled in luxury real estate mm-hmm. for some time.
You helped negotiate, I don't even know how many short sales. You forget about that.
Yes, many, many short sales for clients.
Which is actually a really good skill because it helps you understand both sides. It's the numbers for the bank, which is the same for investments, which is the same for land investing. It's just about the numbers, right?
Right.
But then you have on the other side where you have to be sympathetic for a good reason to the people who are going through this. But I think when people come to the conclusion they wanted to do a short sale, it also was a numbers game for them too. It was a way to dispose of distressed property the least painful way.
Yeah, exactly. And then kind of took a sidetrack out of real estate altogether for maybe 5 years, something like that, working with Heather in her business, where she was the face of that business, mm-hmm. and all about blogging and travel blogging and online education. So that was a fun business for a while. We were traveling the world about 150 days out of the year. That was great. Also a little tiring.
We got so exhausted. You know what? It's like one of those things you complain about it. Like we had to travel 150 days a year, poor us. But
First world problems.
Right. Mm-hmm. By the end of 2019, we were physically, emotionally, physically exhausted because mm-hmm. that does take a toll. And it was cool. It's fun. I want to get back into traveling more. However, I don't want to go 150 days a year.
Yeah, that's a little much.
But it kind of segues into this business because you can do it from anywhere. So a lot of people don't, the reason why we can start traveling again is because this business can be done anywhere.
Yeah.
And a lot of the properties that, well, all the properties that we buy and sell, we don't see.
Yeah, we don't see them at all. Yeah.
No, none of them are here in Southern California.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I want you to finish that. So 2020 came, obviously travel blogging, I shouldn't say travel blogging, traveling came to a complete halt, right? I had known for a while that you were kind of, that you needed to get back into real estate.
Yeah.
You missed it.
That's my passion.
Where I think it might have even been longer than 5 years. I don't know. I should calculate that out. Maybe around 6 years. But regardless, I'm sorry, getting choked up about it. Mm-hmm. But regardless, so we're walking and I tell the stories. I was like, you need to get back into real estate. And you were like, okay. And then you're like, well, what kind of real estate do I want? You know what I mean? That's the next question. Because I was like, I don't want to do flips.
Yeah. Yeah. We didn't want to do fix and flips anymore because while that's a good business and while a lot of people make a lot of money on fixing and flipping properties, there's a lot that goes into it. It's a lot of logistics. It's dealing with contractors. It's it's just a lot of stuff. And it's not as easy as they make it seem on TV.
No. And that's the thing. If you and I were like super handy, like I could, I don't know, I was really good at drywall and plumbing and you were like an electrician and a finished carpenter, it wouldn't be bad. But the problem is that you, and especially during that time, like it's still kind of, it's very hard to find contractors.
Mm-hmm.
Or I should say it's not hard to find contractors. It's hard to find contractors that follow through.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why. And so that was kind of one of the things when you're like, I want to get into real estate. I was like, well, we're not doing that.
Yeah.
And then you came to me and you're like, I want to do land flipping. And I was like, you've lost your freaking mind. I think I said something like, what?
Yeah. You were just shocked. But that's okay. It's okay to be shocking every once in a while, like this title of this podcast.
Right.
No, but so I, you know, land wasn't on my radar at all. You know, I was kind of thinking about other things. Maybe we get into apartment investing and syndicating or commercial properties in some way, or maybe we just do the Burr method and buy rental properties, fixing them up and then, you know, cash out of them and move on to the next
one. We even talked about doing Airbnb stuff, like Airbnb, buying properties just to Airbnb out. Because it was like we had the travel knowledge.
Yep.
But none of those are, those are running businesses. And I'm not saying this isn't running businesses because this is. But those are like, a lot of it's hands on the ground, like hands on the ground, feet on the ground. Go ahead, make fun of me.
I don't know what you're trying to say, Heather, but hands on maybe?
I don't know.
But they could be hands on the ground too, if you want to just put your hands on there.
I think it's feet on the ground. I don't know. Go ahead.
Yeah. So anyhow, I started reading some stuff about people that were doing land investing, basically flipping land, buying it off market, selling it on market, quick turns, you know, like maybe 90 days or less, and doubling their money. And I thought, well, this is perfect for me because I love to buy and sell stuff. I feel like I'm pretty good at recognizing value when I see it. And then also it appeared to be a pretty scalable business by, you know, the lead generation. All that most people were doing at the time was just direct mail, sending out letters in the mail, offers in the mail, and then buying properties off market. So it all seemed to kind of align with what I felt like I'd be good at. So I just kind of went all in, and 2020.
I have to stop because I was not totally like into
you were
it.
Sold on this
no,
idea?
No, but you know, it did sell me on it was the fact that what you said was like, it's, you know, the whole time is short because we've been through too many real estate cycles and the last thing I want to get is stuck in a hold when everything crashes. And so the quicker you move it, the quicker you see the profit and the less likely you are to get stuck in one of those downturns. Go on.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So in 2021 is when we first started buying our first properties. And I think we bought three properties before we actually had one resell because it takes some time, you know, like you put it on the market, you list it and everything like that. So bought our first property in February of 2021, bought three of them actually that month, resold our first property in March of 2021. And then once I did that, then you were like, it works, right? I knew it worked, but I had to prove it to Heather that it worked. So that first year ended up doing over $1.2 million in revenue and over $600,000 in gross profit. So, you know, for the most part, we were able to sell these properties really quickly. We averaged about 90 days hold time on all these properties. 2022, we ramped it up even more, did about $3.4 million and some change in revenue. 2023 did about $8.2 million, and we're striving to do $20 million this year in revenue. So we'll see where we end up with the gross profit, but probably around 40% gross profit, something like that.
Mm-hmm. Right. And we go into more, like, I know people get always shocked when you talk about that. That's something we learned, though, when we were doing education in general. It's important to be we think transparently, show what's of, you know, what's op, what's, what, what am I trying
what's
to say?
Possible?
Yeah. What's possible. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, and there's expenses that go into it and stuff like that. So it's not like you're just like netting or taking home that, you know, at all, but
I wish. No, but the thing is, you know, our thing has always been like, hey, if you're going to learn from someone or whatever, we try to be actually doing what we're teaching.
That's the biggest takeaway, because there's a lot of those, like the false gurus who say, oh, I'll teach you how to do this. And then they have never done it. Mm-hmm. Or they're just like doing scare tactics or optimism tactics. Maybe you know what I mean? Where you're saying something, there's no way. Mm-hmm. So that's how we get into it. That's why we're comfortable talking about it.
So I guess that's a mini background, but, uh-huh. but yeah, so today's topic, mm-hmm. the 9 shocking truths of land investing, I wanted to sort of come up with a list of things that aren't talked about a lot.
Mm-hmm. Well, and the other thing too, is that the story that you just told, like how it all happened, these are things we probably could have really used to know ahead of time no one said, like, cause it's not like you just jumped in with no knowledge. You like tried to learn as much as you could. And it's always kind of the rosy things you don't. So these are things like, I was just glancing at it while you were talking, that if we had known this could have saved us time, money, headache.
Yeah. Well, you know? And the other thing is too, I was pretty experienced in real estate before I even got into this.
Right.
Not land investing at mm-hmm. all, but real estate in general. So these are things that I hadn't realized before getting into the business, even with that experience that I had.
Right. Okay. You want to get into number one?
Yeah. Number one, not every deal closes. Hey everyone, just a quick reminder that you can join our community for free at landconquest.com. Inside, you'll get all the resources, training, and support for building a thriving land flipping business. Once again, that's landconquest.com. All right, enjoy the rest of the show.
I know, because I think the reality is that once, and I see this so much with people in our community, is that they get what they think is like a signed offer back.
Mm-hmm.
And now they think the hard part's done.
Right.
You know, like, okay, I got this, and they've like, they've already like not spent, but emotionally spent.
They're counting the profit already.
Yeah. You mm-hmm. know, and it's, and you have to kind of get into that cycle where it's actually better to walk away from a deal than to force a deal. And we say that all the time, don't force a deal.
Mm-hmm.
I think that might be one thing I say so much. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. Oh,
they're trying to force a deal.
Yeah, it's true. From the my perspective, mm-hmm. you know, when I got into things, I didn't realize that so many deals would fall apart. And I'm not saying like, you know, 90% of the deals fall apart or whatever, but there is a good percentage of them that don't close for whatever reason. Title issues are a big thing with land. Mm-hmm. You know, with land, a lot of times these title issues don't get caught because there's the person that is selling the property doesn't have a loan on it. So anytime that you put a loan on a property, like these title issues get figured out. So a lot of times, you know, these would be people that inherit a piece of land or something like that, and maybe the paperwork wasn't done properly. Maybe there's many heirs to a property, and the seller of the property doesn't even realize that there are additional heirs to the property that actually have an interest in that. They feel like they've been paying the property taxes. It's their name with the county records. They're the owner. Yeah,
Grandma
of it,
said it was mine.
Exactly.
Grandma said I got the property. Well, Grandma didn't put that in writing, and there was no.
Yeah, there was no will. There was no you know, official process to get that done. So we run into that a lot. Things like that are difficult to get past. We also run into some due diligence issues. These could be something like a failed perk test, or it could be something that we found when we went on site on the property, something we didn't like that wasn't really evident by the satellite images or something mm-hmm. like that. So that happens sometimes. And then also sometimes the sellers back out or
disappear.
And you're not, I mean, I guess you could contractually try to force them to mm-hmm. you know, follow through with their commitment. But a lot of times it's not worth it to do that.
A lot of people don't realize just because you have your stuff together doesn't mean somebody else does.
Yeah.
Or maybe it was a priority right then. They wanted to sell it. And then they just literally the paperwork is overwhelming to them.
Yeah. You know, I've had deals fall apart sometimes, like the seller, you know, goes under contract with us. And then a week or two later, after we spent some money on a photographer or something like that, they call us back. They go, oh, I'm going to sell it to my cousin because they expressed some interest mm-hmm. in it. They didn't want me to sell it to you. They wanted to keep it in the family or whatever. Like, you know, so what are you going to do in that case? You're going to just try to force them to go through with the original deal. But in most cases, it's just easier just to say, okay, well, if he doesn't go through with it, call us then, you know. So,
and a lot of times they do because right. the cousin doesn't really have the money.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
The cousin's thinking, they'll think, oh, well, they'll just give it to me.
Yeah.
But no.
So my point in all that is not every deal closes, deals fall apart. And, you know, some things can be controlled somewhat, but some things are beyond your control. And some things you discover during the process of buying and doing your due diligence, which, you know, it's better to walk away from those deals that are going to be a problem that you discover. Okay, so number two, it's not all about the profit percentage.
My gosh, that is so true, because a lot of times you'll be like, well, you have an example here, buying for $600 and selling it for $5,000 sounds great. But in reality, it's hard to make real progress that way.
Yeah.
Because the thing is that you might say, oh my gosh, if I did that, a bigger property, I only make 20% or 40%. But if I did these small ones, I could make 150%, right?
Yes.
Or whatever. But the problem is that, okay, that is a lot of work. And I also want to say, like, this is what I've learned from real estate from the beginning of time. The smaller the transaction, the bigger the problem. I don't know what it is. I have no idea what it is. But it,
so it's best money, less money, more problems.
Yeah. Yes. Okay. It's always like that.
Yes, it is.
But yeah, that would be great. Oh my gosh, I want 250% or whatever right. it is, right? That sounds wonderful. But how many transactions do you have to do to make that same dollar amount?
Right.
Like, don't do it based off of the percentage. Who the heck cares about that? It's about the dollars and your life.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you want to be a hustler for, you know, buying $500, please don't use that as a clip on Instagram. But
like, you want to be a hustler.
If you want to be a hustler,
we'll edit it together Heather, with some other things. Yeah.
By the way, you're like drinking coffee. Like it's, I almost feel like you're rubbing it in my face that I don't have any coffee here.
How do you know it's coffee? Could be water.
Right. I know you better
than
that.
Could be vodka.
Could be, well, that would be impossible since we don't drink, but do you have something to share?
I drink coffee.
Coffee. I know. And our daughter did remind me that that is a drug.
Hmm. Coffee.
Yeah, it's true. So you need to go beyond the percentages. It's great to look at the end. And we do that. We say, okay, we do this percentage, but chasing the small ones just to make the greater percentage doesn't.
Yeah.
That's vanity numbers.
That's a hard road to go down, you know? And I see investors get stuck in that mode. And I've thought about it before too. Like, okay, you know, buy this property for, you know, a smaller deal, like buy a property for $7,000 and sell it for $21,000. I mean, like tripling your money. That sounds amazing. But in reality, it's much better to buy a property for $20,000 and sell it for $40,000.
So. You know what I think it is? I think it's safety because I can lose $7,000. It's not having the confidence in yourself. So maybe start at that, but don't stay there.
Right. Yeah. It's good to get your feet wet doing smaller deals. That's fine, but just don't get stuck there. Yeah.
Yeah. But I think that's what it is. It's like, okay, I don't have confidence in myself. If I lose $7,000, so you're going into it thinking you're going to lose, which is no, you need to, then you're probably forcing a deal if you think that's an option.
Yeah. So I am an optimist to a fault sometimes. Mm-hmm. So I have like the opposite mindset. I'm always thinking that I'm going to do better. You know,
it's okay. I'm
never thinking I'm going to lose.
It's what I'm here to knock you down.
I rarely lose. So.
And you rarely challenge accepted.
Well, I rarely, rarely, you know, lose on these types of deals. So.
Yeah, but it's not luck. It's not like, and a lot of people who are scared have that mindset. They think there's luck. It's not. It's because you're doing your due diligence. You're doing the research.
We're going to get to that, Heather.
Oh, am I? Okay.
Yes.
Okay, go on.
Okay. Number three, consistency is the most underrated aspect of this business.
100%.
Yeah. So talking about consistency in a number of things, first of all, lead generation, you know, you got to have the leads continually flowing in if you want the deals. So you're going to have consistency with the following up with your leads daily, you know, and then doing all the boring stuff in the business that will produce the most results.
Well, this is just a great segue for our business system, because a couple of things. You say lead generation, something that you did pretty soon or pretty close to the beginning was that you started adding it to the calendar that on this date we send out mail.
Yeah.
Because if we didn't do that, I'd be like, let's do it tomorrow, Pete. Let's go. I don't know. Let's do something else. Let's do that tomorrow. Right.
Yeah.
And then tomorrow I'd be like, let's do it tomorrow. Let's do it tomorrow. And I know that people do that because you push it aside because it takes thought.
Right.
It takes effort.
It's effort. Yeah.
Right. But if you put it on the calendar on the 12th of every month, I just made that up, by the way, I'm going to dedicate 2 hours that I'm going to do that.
Right.
Then it becomes kind of those, you know, if you take a medication, it's the same kind of thing. It's non-negotiable.
Yeah.
You know? And then the following up on leads daily and doing all the boring stuff. Okay. Especially with my kind of brain, doing all the boring stuff, it has to be systematized because I'm not going to, you'll do the boring stuff. Not, I mean, it's not like you enjoy doing the boring stuff, but it's about creating systems. So you created a business system that works for my brain and it works for your brain.
Yeah.
Go ahead, take it away.
Well, yeah, our software, we call it the Land Conquest Business System. But essentially, you know, there's multiple aspects to it. You know, there's a CRM portion. There's managing all the processes within the business. There's a website and phone numbers and all this kind of stuff. But it all works together, basically. You know, as far as the lead side of things, we've got We've got a lot of automations built in, automated follow-up type things that, you know, when a lead comes into the system, a lot of the follow-up is going out automatically, you know, mostly with text messages and emails and things like that. And, you know, say you get a lead that just is simply not ready for whatever reason. We have a drip campaign, automated drip campaign for a year where, you know, basically sending out kind of messages on a regular basis.
And it does I wouldn't have to go in there and be like,
oh, no, no, like, it just happens.
Yeah. And that's the big thing. It's like this, that's where the magic of this whole system is that it doesn't, you're not doing anything actively. Once you add that in there, it's already pre-programmed to do all the stuff.
And you're just waiting for someone to respond.
Right.
So, and then when they respond, they're alive again.
Right. And that's the thing is that for different brains too, the dopamine hit, mm-hmm. like that's an exciting thing. You get this coming in. I want to respond. This is exciting.
Yep.
Do I want to be like, hey, I've been following up with you every.
No. Yeah. That's, you know, and there's something to be said for manually like calling someone mm-hmm. or something every once in a while, if it's a really hot lead or whatever. But a lot of this, you know, a lot of the things happen when people are ready on their end. And they'll reach out when they're ready, as long as you stay in front of them.
Right. And so. The system will even remind you or can remind you to do that call too, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So use.
Yeah.
Again, that's kind of like if someone tells me to do it, I have to do it.
Yeah. And in the very near future, we will have AI voice actually being able to call them as well.
Will it be my voice or your voice?
We're using your voice.
Yeah, right. But
hey! You didn't know that? Well, I've already got lots of samples of your voice.
Oh, no. All over YouTube. I know. Yeah. Darn travel videos. No, the funny thing is we've been playing with the AI voice and it actually sounds real.
It's amazing. Yeah. Yeah, it's coming soon. So that'll be part of the Land Conquest business system as soon as it's prime time ready.
Right. And where can they find more information about the Land Conquest business system?
Oh, okay. Just software.landconquest.com.
Right. Okay. And the next one, this leads right into it. You can't do it all yourself.
Oh, yes.
And I think that in the beginning, I was like, Pete's going to have to do it all. No, but I mean, and you were doing it all. And you can do it all, right? But you can only do so much.
Only to
much.
A certain point. If you're going to do a couple deals a month, possibly you could do it all. But even then, it actually is going to get pretty burdensome, I guess you could say.
Right. And you need to like doing all those things because you're not going to do it as well as somebody who is either getting paid or that enjoys it.
You know, as you grow, as you start, you know, having higher aspirations in this business to do more deals, to do bigger deals and everything like that, you're going to want to build out a team of professionals around you specializing in different things. Things maybe that you don't enjoy doing or you're not good at doing first. And then as you grow, you know, your team will be getting more and more specialized. So we've got a pretty large team built out now, and everyone is sort of specialized in their own little area. Mm-hmm. You know, before, you know, when had less people on the team, everyone was more of a generalist, kind of taking on lots of different roles. But as we've grown, it's been more and more specialized. And, you know, our results have really improved over time as well.
This is a weird usage of this, but there's riches and niches. And it's, you think it's like in the money making, but it's also in the money doing.
Yeah.
Or, you know what I mean?
Yes.
Well, that's just an important thing to remember that, and you don't need to be an expert in everything. And if you don't like doing one part of it, find somebody who is good at it, that does like it doing that, or just does it better than you.
So for me and for a lot of investors, it's great to start with an administrative assistant to help you out with a lot of the paperwork stuff, a lot of the tedious types of things in the business. And from there, you can sort of decide which roles you want to start. Mm-hmm. You know, tackling next, you know, like for me, it was an acquisition manager, you know, calling all the sellers and getting the properties under contract. Are you looking to scale your land flipping business quickly? Well, we're happy to present our new cutting edge system built specifically for land flippers. Take a look at the Land Conquest business system today and you'll gain full access to a customizable pre-made website, CRM, dedicated phone numbers, text automations, 24/7 support, and more. It's basically a business in the box. Go to software.landconquest.com to learn more.
So. And I think a lot of people get worried about for some reason, real estate paperwork really scares people. Mm. And I'm not sure if everyone knows, but you can hire transaction coordinators.
Yes.
And they can even be independent. They don't have to be employees or anything. There's tons of people who run their own transaction coordinator companies.
Yep.
And that might be a really, really good place to start too. As soon as it gets under contract, you know, to buy and to sell.
I agree with you. Yeah. A great transaction coordinator is like they're worth their weight in gold. Mm-hmm.
And they're going to know local regulations. They're going to just know all the different things that need to happen that unless you want that to be your sole job. I did I did that in a way for us, and you've done it for us too during the real estate when we were doing like short sales and all that kind of stuff. And we realized quickly that even though we understood real estate,
it's tough. I mean, you got to be completely focused on the paperwork side and communications and keeping the deal moving along. And if you're if you're the type that's like good at that type of stuff, then great. You know, maybe that's not a big deal. But if you're trying to put together deals and do all these other aspects, keep the leads coming in, doing all these other aspects of the business, you might want to farm that part out.
Right. And I think for risk mitigation as well, because they're specialized, they see all these kinds of things. So
number five, you won't want to buy every property that comes in, even if the price is right. So I didn't realize this at first. I figured that I would buy a property. No, I would buy every property if the price is right. You know, I thought like there was no property I would turn down if I determined there was a price that was right for every property. But I soon realized that that's not the case. There's a lot of properties that we simply do not want to buy just because I know that they are going to be a pain in the butt to resell. There's really, you know, you'd have to get it at such a very small price in a lot of cases in order to have enough profit to make it worth it, you know? So for us, you know, we don't buy, you know, landlocked properties. We don't buy, you know, properties that are on the side of a mountain, you know, things like that. And even if I got a lot of those properties really cheap, it's just not worth it.
Right. A good example of that is that you had the opportunity to buy a piece of land that was completely, well, it was a lake. I mean, it was the middle of a lake or something.
It was underwater.
Underwater.
It was off the shore, actually. Right.
But you got it at a price where it technically could have made sense if we wanted to start like an oyster farm.
Yes.
And I remember you talking about it and people were like, we'll start the oyster farm. And I was like, it doesn't matter the price. I'm not starting an oyster farm. And I'm not going to be like, you know what I mean? Like, we don't even eat oysters. No, I don't. We're not starting a new business. But there's other things where it just doesn't. Yeah. Even if you could conceive, like you get something so cheap and someone's going to buy it on the side of a hill. Mm-hmm. Someone will use it for something, right? And yeah, you probably could resell it or whatever, but at what extent? And the human toll cost, that's what we talk about too, is what is your time better used for? Trying to sell this piece of property that, yeah, you're going to sell it for something, or using that same time and effort into something where you're going to make a lot more money.
Yeah, yeah.
And time is a limited resource.
That is the most limited resource we have. That's one thing that really kind of shocked me at first. Like I didn't realize that there would be, you know, like if the price was right, I was thinking the price is right, I'm going to buy it.
You keep saying the price is right. And I keep thinking of the show, like and I'm thinking Wheel of Fortune. So thanks for that. Okay. Number six, I'm sorry, I jumped the gun because I kind of alluded to it. Cheap properties with problems bog you down and don't make you much money.
Yes. Okay.
I don't like cheap. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, these problem properties cause more headaches, are harder to sell, and make you less money. So focus on the properties that have more of a potential profit margin, and I think you'll be better off. They sell quicker and they'll make you more money.
Cheaper properties, more problems.
Yes. Yep.
Less money, more problems. Is that what we're saying?
Yes. Okay. That's the theme here.
Okay. Yeah. Some of your marketing efforts will produce zero results is number seven. Yeah, what do you mean by that?
Sometimes, you know, you might, you know, we do a lot of direct mail and sometimes we'll mail a list and they will produce zero results.
But if you look at it that way, or you just saved yourself from an area that's not working, or you learned a lesson that you're going to use to make more money.
Yep. You know, I might have priced it wrong. I might have just sent it to an area that is not responsive to direct mail. You know, maybe there was something wrong with the data. There's can be all kinds of things. But, you know, I think I've mentioned many times that my first mailer, 10,000 pieces of mail, produced no deals.
I feel like we need like the sound of the toilet, like flushing.
Yeah, that would be a good one. But it produced zero deals. And that was a lot of money. You know, it's like, you know, getting going on this, like I had to prove to Heather that this business actually worked, and sending out that many pieces of mail and getting no deals out of it, you know, it's kind of, well, I still held out hope for a little while. So in hindsight, it was easy for me to look back and say, you know, not one deal came from that initial mail where I had leads and everything like that, but just nothing came from it. So it's just kind of luck of the draw sometimes, but you don't look at it on a basis of like that first mail or something like
you're
that.
Just or practicing.
If you had a loser, you know, like sometimes it just happens. So
like making pancakes, the first one normally sucks, except for if you make it right.
Yeah, well, I'm a pro.
Pancake pro, wow.
Yeah.
I'm a couple things. I'm shocked that I don't use that against you or hold that against you more, that you didn't get any leads from that. Like every single time you bring that up, I have forgotten about it. And so it ignites something in me, like I should be making fun of you about it more. And the second thing is it was because it was too hot of an area.
Yeah.
And who would have thought the hottest areas are not the best areas.
Yeah. Well, and I priced it way too cheap.
Right. Yes.
Yeah. So I was like offering like 25 cents on a dollar or something like that.
So you were insulting people in a hot market.
Yeah. It was just a bad combination. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I still had a couple of potential deals come out of it, but I didn't move forward with them because I just wasn't sure. Mm-hmm. So
and that's
okay. Maybe those were deals. Who knows?
Yeah. But that's another thing, though. It's OK to walk away just because you're unsure. Mm-hmm. Even if you can't identify it. Let's say you just have a feeling about it and you're like, oh, I mean, this or that. If you just don't feel comfortable with it, walk away.
Yeah.
It's better to lose money than to lose money.
Yeah. The thing with land is every piece of land is different. Mm-hmm. It's not like there's always perfect comps available. So sometimes you have to go with what you've got and make a judgment call. And if you're just not comfortable, you're not seeing enough data to kind of justify what you think, then, you know, the better course of action in a lot of ways is just to walk away and live to fight another day.
Yeah, there are always more deals. And, and that goes along that whole thing about forcing a deal. Everyone gets really hung up on the fact they think that, like, if I don't do something with this deal, I'll never have another deal before again. This is it. It's this one or not. And I'm not sure where that, I mean, it's some sort of psychological, it's the scarcity mindset, right?
Scarcity, yeah.
But I don't know the way to, other than to just keep saying that there will be more deals. You're still learning. Yeah. It's okay.
Yep.
And some people take longer. And that's the other reality. Some people will jump into this and be successful, like, really quick. With the same information, the same everything. And other people, it will take longer.
Mm-hmm. Don't give up.
Yeah, don't give up and keep learning. And, you know, all the free resources out there, everyone talking about it, listen to every podcast, absorb every single thing. You join our community. Listen to what's being said and understand the between the lines thing. You know, our community is pretty cool that people are talking. They're not holding back.
Right.
And, you know, a lot of communities, it's kind of like you have to read between the lines. But there is some read between the lines. See what the common topics are. Follow everyone that is asking a question. Look and see what they're saying. Look for opportunities to learn. You know, you're going to have to jump all in. And then the moment when you're like, it's too much, that's when you definitely don't quit.
And by the way, to find our community, it's on the school platform, school.com, SKOOL.com/landconquest. Or you can simply go to landconquest.com and get there that way as well.
You have the next one. Number 8 is getting a deal under contract is just a piece of the puzzle. There's a lot of work after you sign a contract.
Yes. So I used to think that, you know, in this land business of like, hey, once we got a deal under contract, it was simply a matter of time till it closed and we were done with it. But there's just a lot of stuff that happens after that point. You know, you've got a whole process to investigate the property. You've got the title stuff happening. You've got photos and things like that. And, you know, just potential issues that can come up. So it's just kind of the tip of the iceberg. And then actually after you buy the property, then you've got the whole resale process. You've got to find an agent. You've got to, you know, negotiate deals that come in, go through closing, lots of stuff.
Ideally, I would be looking for an agent before it even closes. I mean, you don't have to guarantee.
That's part of our process.
Yeah. But what you're saying is that it's not just like one thing and then you're good.
Yes.
You know, it's like that's just the first step. That's and then you the get start. Into it. Yeah.
Yeah. There's just a lot that goes into it. And I just didn't realize how much stuff goes into it. Sometimes I look back on, you know, I like to break down deals after they're fully done and just kind of look at how it all progressed and everything. So I'll see all the correspondence, you know, everything's in our Land Conquest business system. So I'll see right when they first called in the notes from my team, you know, like what we thought it was worth at that time, what the broker said it was worth, like how all of our due diligence process went, and then the marketing that we did, any price reductions, like all that stuff that happens, like on the transaction and everything. And then it's just like volumes and volumes of correspondence, emails, you know, notes from the team, like all kinds of different stuff happens. Like there's a lot of little touch points that happen from the time you get a property under contract to the time it actually resells and you get a wire transfer.
Right. So. And if this sounds like a lot, we also do have a training program.
Yes. Yes. As well. So we've got some details on that in the Land Conquest community. So. Right.
Okay. So number 9, do you want to take away with your last one?
Number 9, the biggest difference between professional and amateur investors is due diligence. Due diligence is knowledge about a property. So this is your process of investigating a property to determine it is what you think it is. And, you know, knowledge is power. Mm-hmm. And it stops you from making bad deals and that will waste your time and or lose you money.
Right. The more you can learn about a property, the better.
Yep.
You can never know too much. You should really know this property before. Can you use it for what you're expecting to use it for? Is there any weird thing that's happened? Has it failed stuff? Where are you building? Like, are they open to it? Can it get, I mean, we go through all this in different episodes too, but like a professional is going to look at it and know all the different things that they need to know before they make that final decision.
Yep. You really should be understanding a property fully before you actually close on it. And believe me, at first, this doesn't sound exciting. I know due diligence is like the least exciting thing about this business, researching a property. But it's really the difference between what makes a professional land investor and kind of an amateur that's kind of rolling the dice. And I was guilty of this at the beginning. You know, I didn't do the type of research on these properties that we were buying at the beginning that we do now.
Or even coming from real estate background, where you're reviewing these kinds of things, you know.
So in a way, I was lucky on some of those very first deals that things didn't go wrong, or, you know, there wasn't something hidden that I just didn't discover or whatever. But in reality, you kind of learn as you go, and we're always adding stuff to our due diligence process as we learn more. Every area is a little bit different, so they've all got their nuances, I guess you could say. But it's not an exciting thing, but it's a very, very, very important thing. And I would suggest putting an extensive due diligence process in place as you are buying these properties. And if you discover something bad, it's better to walk away and then just close on it and just kind of ignore what you found.
Right. You know, in the beginning, it almost feels overwhelming in a sense, but the more you do it, it's easier to understand it.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. It's not scary. You're just trying to understand, like, can I use it for this? Is there going to be any sort of issues when I got to resell it?
Yeah. One of the things that I always kind of think about is the end buyer. Right. You know, like, what kind of questions are they going to be asking? What kind of uses are they going to want? Like, what's important to them? We try to figure out all that stuff. So when we go to resell the property with an agent, we can provide them all that information and say, okay, here's a story about the utilities. Here's a story about, you know, what it's going to take to build on this property. So we lay that all out there, so it's then easier to resell. Do you have a great deal under contract? Well, submit it to partnerwithpete.com. The Partner with Pete program is a deal funding program where we will actually use our funds to complete the purchase of the property. We will do every other step of the process, including the due diligence, the transaction side, the marketing side, and the transaction on the resale side. And when all the dust settles, we will split the profits 50-50. There is no downside for you as an investor, only upside. So once again, go to partnerwithpete.com, submit your deal there, and let's get it funded.
Right, yeah. And you're also looking at it when you can't put your finger on it. Would I want to buy this? Like, would I want to build a home for my family?
Yeah.
Or would I want to use this recreationally?
Yeah.
Okay. So the next segment?
Well, segues, you know, those things that you ride around town in.
Jeez, I'm like, I really do need that coffee. Like, I'm really struggling today. The next part of this podcast is where we read questions from our community at landconquest.com. And so Pete picks these and then he makes me read them out loud. And sometimes it's enjoyable because I, you know, can't read. So today we'll see. John says, agricultural unimproved vacant land. Do you mail there? See, I almost said, do you mall there?
Mm-hmm.
Some counties contain a large number. In some instances, the majority is agricultural improved land. Just wondering, do you send your mailing there?
Yes, we do. Yeah, a lot of the properties that we buy are just agricultural. They're zoned agricultural. In a lot of areas, that's kind of the default if it's outside of a residential area or commercial area, something like that. Pretty much everything else is zoned agricultural. So that's some areas. And some areas have different designations when it gets in kind of open spaces and stuff. But yes, we mail those areas. A lot of the properties that we buy are designated agricultural. And whether they're being used as a farm field or some sort of, you know, agricultural operation, is it may or may not be. You know, it could be just forest and it's designated agricultural. So we just, we send to all those types of properties and we buy and sell a lot of them.
I think a lot of people think that that means that you can only grow on it. And a lot of times you can have a certain amount of houses, right?
Mm-hmm.
So agricultural doesn't mean just farmland.
Yeah. And zoning is different for each area too. They have different classifications. So agricultural is just kind of like a general category. Right. A lot of them fall
into. And that comes back to, because the whole United States is already zoned, which I found really interesting. Like, I didn't realize that. Like, it's all zoned. And so some places have different zoning for this, like, it'll look like the same word, but it doesn't mean the same thing. Mm-hmm. So when you look at the zoning, look and see in the area you're mailing, what does it really mean before you freak out about, you know, because if you're like me, you'd freak out. Jaden says, saving up to start. Hey, everyone, my name is Jaden and I'm 19 years old from Orlando, Florida. I recently was put on about this model of real estate and I'm actively researching so I can begin. I want to flip my first property in a few months. So how much do you suggest I save up for that first purchase? Thank you. This is actually like really freaking exciting.
Yeah, very cool. Well, you know, the thing that you are going to have to likely invest in, you've got kind of infrastructure for your business. Mm-hmm. I guess you've got to get a website. You've got to, you know, get some sort of way to handle your incoming leads. You've got to get a phone line, email address, you know, all these kinds of stuff. So you got that type of thing. Probably want to do a business entity like a LLC or S Corp or something like that. So you've got those expenses. Then you also have to consider how you're going to generate your leads. Are you going to just cold call people? Are you going to send out direct mail? So that would be kind of the next layer of expenses. And it depends, you know, it depends on what you're going to do as to how much you're going to need to dedicate to that that side of things. And then from there, once you get a property under contract, you have to consider, are you going to work with a partner that is going to purchase that property with you and fund that deal? Or are you going to use your own funds? So I assume maybe you're getting started. You probably want to work with a partner in order to fund those deals. And we have a partner program. It's called Partner with Pete, partnerwithpete.com. And essentially what happens is that once an investor gets a property under contract, they submit it on our website, partnerwithpete.com. We review the deal. And if it's a deal that fits within our criteria, then we agree to fund the deal. And basically what happens is we'll take the baton from that point and run with it. So we handle all the due diligence. We handle any of the testing, perk tests or survey, anything like that that needs to be done. We get the transaction closed. We work with an agent to resell the property. We negotiate deals that come in. We handle the transaction on the resale side. And then when the property sells, we simply split the profits 50-50. So it's a real win-win situation. The investor doesn't have any downside. You know, like if we were to lose money on the deal, it's not like we're coming after the investor and saying, hey, you know, you owe us this loss. No, it's nothing like that. Only upside. And obviously the investor doesn't have to use their own money to close on that transaction. We use our money to close on those deals. So
yeah, I would do like a, you know, basic kind of budgeting thing, get a spreadsheet, research all the different things you need, write down how much you want to do, create a budget for your marketing, what you want to spend, and then say, okay, this is what I need, you know, to get started on that.
I definitely think that once you get your business established, get kind of that stuff out of the way, then devote as much as you can to the marketing side of things, and then work with deal partners in order to fund the deals.
Right. So. Yeah. And it's a good way to learn more and stuff too. Definitely. Okay. Dalton says, cold call versus mail. I'm wanting feedback from some of the higher level marketing land guys and gals. I would like opinions on whether mail or hiring the American cold calling company has been more effective. All I've ever done is mail. I feel like every deal ends in a phone call for the most part anyways.
Okay, so, you know, we've experimented with cold calling, not ourselves. You know, we hired a service to do cold calling for us. Mm-hmm. And it's a different thing. You know, you get a lot of leads with cold calling, but the leads generally have maybe not as high of motivation as you would with the direct mail. Mm-hmm. So what we found is that we get a ton of leads coming in with the cold calling, but they're not ready for prime time yet. Like they take a lot of work a lot of times in order to get to the point where they're actually a deal. So you get a lot of people, you get a lot of sellers that are interested, but they want retail value for their properties or retail plus. Mm-hmm. And obviously that doesn't work in our situation. We need to be buying at a decent price. So yeah, it's just a matter of like being able to filter through all those things. So we just found for our purposes, we're better off just sending out mail. And then that mail does a great job of filtering the motivation of the sellers to begin with. So.
Okay. Catherine says, mailer's question. I saw a mailer for purchasing homes that I liked and wanted to do something similar. However, it had the real estate agent's picture on it. Are anyone of positive or negative experiences putting your picture on a mailer or postcard?
Yeah. So, you know, I don't think I've seen any mailers from land investors specifically with their photo on there, but I don't know. I could potentially see it working. Potentially if you are really focused on maybe a narrow geographic area, maybe that you live in or something like that. Maybe you're trying to build that connection with the local community, something like that. Maybe that would be effective.
I think that real estate agents, it's different. People want to have a connection, so they want to see that face. So right. That's why real estate agents use pictures from 30 years ago. I'm sorry, did I say that out loud?
Yes, you did, Heather.
I'm sorry.
It's true, though.
You know what I mean? Like, they want that connection, so that's important. I think what you're saying is important to say that you could try it and see what happens. I don't like... I kind of go a little bit both ways, especially as a female. I don't know. You know what I mean? You get weird stuff. So, and then also you're personalizing that, which could be good, but also could be bad.
Yeah.
Because if someone doesn't like your offer... They're going to be like,
they're personally going to be mad at you.
Yeah. I hate you. I'm going to find you and hunt you down. You know, not really, but you know what I mean? And I also think that a lot of people, if they're kind of in a situation where they just want to unload it, they feel safer going. It's like a company. Mm-hmm. I'm selling it to a company. It's not this person that's trying to, you know, scam me. Because a lot of people get scared about, not a lot of people, but like, am I being scammed? That's a big thing.
Right.
You know,
They want to work with a legitimate company. And there's two approaches. You could personalize your marketing, like as an individual, like you're a land buyer and you work with sellers and all this kind of stuff. Or you could position yourself as just a professional company for them to work with to get the deal closed. So we do the latter. You know, I used to put my name on the offer letter and everything, and then I'd have a bunch of people, you know, calling in to talk to Pete and like,
well, and they want to talk to me.
They only want to talk to me and, you know, and yell at me or something like that. So I'd imagine if you put your picture on there, you know, I'm sure countless times people would probably mark it up and write a mustache on me or something and send it back.
You, it's okay. Me, not so
much. It would
much.
Be worse, but.
No, but I mean, I think it's worth, if you're okay with that, it might be worth a try, but I don't know. I think it could go either way, but that's why real estate agents do it, because of that connection. And then, you would be also, you'd still want to be very upfront that, you know, it's that your intention's not to buy this for yourself. Like I see a lot of people saying, oh, I'm looking for this for my family. No, they're not.
Yeah.
You're not looking for your family. Yeah. Your family's not building a home there. Let's just be, you know, like cut that. Because then if you ever do anything with the property, which is your goal, they're going to be like, Catherine lied to me. Catherine's family is not living here and I wanted her to be my neighbor because she looks cool and nice. So.
Yeah.
Anyways, that's all I've got for today. Where can everyone find you on the internet?
Okay, well, you can find us on YouTube at Turning Profit. So that's, we put a lot of effort into our YouTube channel. Obviously, we put our podcast, if you're listening to this podcast, we put our video versions of the podcast on the YouTube channel. We also post other cool videos on there as well. So go check it out and subscribe if you haven't already. I'm also on Instagram at Partner with Pete. And TikTok at Partner with Pete.
You
as
doing
well.
Dancing or whatever? Like,
yeah. Well, I don't dance as much as I used to on there. Maybe if you go back to some of the older stuff.
I can have you do the do and dance thing.
No, I don't do any dancing.
Bummer. So,
sorry Maybe that's an area I'll get into. I need to study it.
Land
a little more.
Guy or something. Like land guy.
Makes me
that
cringe.
Dances.
No, that wouldn't be me. That's not me.
No, I mean no disrespect. You have your qualities. I don't think I've ever seen you dance. So I don't know. Maybe you've got mad skills. Anyways, thank
just
you guys.
Break dancing.
Just break dancing. Oh, yeah, for when you were five. Yeah. Thank you for joining us, and we will see you again next week.
We'll see you soon.
Bye.
Bye.
Ready to start turning profit yourself? Head to turningprofit.com to step up your real estate investing game. See you on the next episode.